Okay, so we always introduced it more or less the same way, that in Elzman we're learning about the way tshuva is perceived by different personalities, and we've been doing this, I believe, for about 8 years or so. I think it's the 9th year that we've been doing this. And we're going to speak about the way that different people relate to the mitzvah of tshuva. We do that for two reasons. Number one, tshuva is it's an amazingly complex and broad sugya. It's a sugya in lamdas and machshava. It's a sugya in halacha. It's a sugya in musar. There's a lot to say about tshuva, and it's fascinating the way that some of the greatest thinkers of our Masorah were able to relate to tshuva, albeit in somewhat different ways, that they were able to analyze tshuva, each in their own sort of style of Torah, and each in their own kind of a unique flavor. So in Nevardak, they spoke about tshuva with a certain harshness, which was different than the way they spoke about tshuva by the Pizetzner, with a certain kind of imagination and a certain kind of ambition. It's different than the Chizuk that Rabbi Nachman was giving over, or the emphasis on free will or free choice that the Rambam was emphasizing. And in a certain sense, there is a certain kind of a range in the way that tshuva is spoken about. And it's important, number one, for us to be aware of the range. It's good to be to know the different thinkers in Klal Yisrael. And tshuva is not a bad entrance point in terms of the machshava of so many different people. And more than that, aside from just getting us to be more familiar with certain thinkers, what it also does is hopefully we will not all connect to the same mahalach in regards to tshuva. Then not all of us are going to hear an approach, and we all are going to react and say, like, that's it. And it's not one sefer related to tshuva, which is the sefer that all of us should be learning. But there are different svarim. So there are certain classics. Rambam Hilchos Tshuva is undoubtedly a classic we should all be familiar with. But as far as some of the newer svarim, some of the newer insights, so there are svarim that are going to resonate more with some rather than others. And it's important that we get used to and that we become aware of the svarim that are out there. We're speaking today about a particularly unique and important figure who was Nifter, not that long ago, and that is Akev. Erev Shabbos Akev, who passed away, which is Steinsaltz. I want to make an observation about his biography, and then we're going to speak a lot about his insights in tshuva. But if you read enough biographies out there and you're a little bit cynical, if the fact that I once spoke at the Teen Minyan in Montreal, and I speak right now, does not make me really an internationally renowned speaker. Maybe I could write that on a bio. The fact that I once printed my notes on the first siman of Shulchan Aruch and it was 2 paragraphs long does not make me a published author. But sometimes if you, again, I'm positive for cynicism, but if you read certain bios, so you're not always so sure that everyone's in agreement about that. But Steinsaltz was actually world renowned. He was actually a major author. You know, his edition of the Gemara was Hebrew, English, Russian, French, Spanish. You know, books that in the tens that have been bought in the thousands and hundreds of thousands. You're dealing with an actually world renowned figure. And I introduced with the cynicism not only because I thought it was a cute sort of entrance point, because it's important to appreciate who Rav Steinsaltz was and what he was really all about. He was affiliated with Chabad here in Eretz Yisrael. He was a person that put out a massive range of Sfarim, as we'll speak about in a bit. He is also a person who was very much involved as far as the world of education and the world of Chinuch, a whole lot of teaching, a fascinating figure and a very important figure that Rav Steinsaltz was. He accomplished an enormous amount. I want to just source number two on the sheet as far as just tapping into, I think it's important when we speak about Steinsaltz, but for other thinkers in general. So he has a talk, it's a sefer called Chayei Shana, which are his drushas on the Moedim. And he writes there about Chai Elul. Some of us may be familiar with Chai Elul in terms of Chassidus, especially by Chabad and some others. So Chai Elul, Yud Ches Elul, is the day of the birthday of both the Baal Shem Tov and the Baal HaTanya. By the Chassidim, they find this to be incredibly important. Chai Elul, Yud Ches Elul, is the day that the Baal Shem and the Alter Rebbe of Chabad, the first Baal Shem, are born, because they view that as being symbolic of something. That Elul was a time which was very morose. Elul was a time that was very depressing. And it is through the birth of the Baal Shem Tov and the Alter Rebbe of Chabad, towards Chassidus, that you insert some chayim, some life, chai, into Elul. That it takes an Elul which was very depressing and it inserts a certain kind of excitement into Elul. So if Steinsaltz, as a Chabadnik, we'll speak about different kinds of people throughout this month, today. As a Chabadnik, so Steinsaltz, this is a very big day for him, Chai Elul. And one of the things he says is that people make mistakes sometimes in assessing the legacy of the Baal Shem and of the Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. And they do so in the following way. He said there are people, if you want to summarize who they were, and here's an important observation, If you want to summarize who they were, you summarize their accomplishments. These are the books that they wrote. Here are the institutions that they built. These are the lives that they touched. And you can assess a person based on his accomplishments. Rav Steinzel says that's often true and it's often accurate. But there's another category of person that you would, in a certain sense, oddly enough, by focusing on just all of their accomplishments, by focusing on all that they did, where you would miss what was really going on. That there are people, he says, who did a lot, but there's so much more than just what their accomplishments. Their accomplishments, in many ways, the books they wrote, are extra. That what they really were was etzem mahusam chayehem. Just their existence and their life represented something, says about the Baal Shem and about the Baal Tanya, that they were chayehem atzmam heim kedusha. The fact that they were born and existed was in and of itself something powerful. It's something just the experience of in this world there were Jews that were so holy. Had they never written a book, had they never impacted, built an institution, just the fact that they were alive was in and of itself of enormous significance. I think that talking about Steindl is important to also, so you would be sent to this Lahabdil, but in a certain sense, he was a person of enormous accomplishments, but let's not only focus a little bit on accomplishments, but also it's important to always appreciate who a person is in their essence, and what are the values of a person, and what does it mean that this person was around. And Steindl was an amazingly intriguing and amazingly fascinating thinker. I want to give a couple points of introduction. We're going to be open and honest about elements of the intense criticism that Rav Steinzel went under. We do that because we're trying to be open and honest, to have real conversations. Rav Steinzel was an amazingly creative, out-of-the-box kind of a thinker. Like many Chabadnikim, so he had allegiance, you know, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, but there's a lot of sort of freedom. Aside from that, you're not always looking over your shoulder. A lot of Chabadnikim have a certain kind of independence to feel like what they're doing is important. He's a very creative person. What's amazing about him is, number one, he wrote a very wide range of Sfarim. We'll speak about it in a minute from a Tshuva perspective. Some of him, his own original thoughts on the Parsha, own original thoughts on Moedim, introductions to Torah HaKabbalah. What he also did, which was fascinating, and here's a certain skill, many creative people have to always be exceptionally creative. Rav Steinzel was able to make texts accessible to a wide range of people. The Steinzel's Gemaras that many of us are familiar with, translated into multiple languages. The Steinzel's Gemara, which was to take the Gemara and to make it significantly more accessible for people. That was a text, Gemara, which is important. But it was very hard. Think before Art Scroll. So for him to start, you know, undergoing, putting out a work that people could use in more modern Hebrew, translated into English, with a bit of commentary, make the Gemara more relevant, more accessible, and easier to follow. So he wanted to make text more accessible. He did that not only with Gemara, but with other Sfarim also. One of them important for us is the Tanya. He put out an edition of Tanya, where he explains, where he elaborates that the Sefer Tanya, one of the most fundamental Sfarim in Chassidus of Chabad for sure, but Chassidus Kichlal, and Jewish thought in the last couple hundred years, undoubtedly, to make it more accessible, to open up works, which requires, oddly enough, almost a form of tzimtzum. To put out someone else's work sometimes requires you to be a little bit less creative when you're doing so, and that in and of itself is something which is truly remarkable. And he was a figure of note founding institutions. He was involved a lot and a really, really very unique and very important figure. We are going to focus on his impact in the realm of tshuva. We're going to do so in two ways. The first is going to be significantly briefer, but it's going to give us a little bit of insight in terms of his range. The second is going to be trying to develop what I think is a yisod, at least in two, three, four places in his writings that comes up about tshuva, and for me at least resonates a lot and is very important. Let's begin as follows. What did he do for the world of tshuva? Many people didn't do that much for the world of tshuva. They learned about tshuva, he wrote about tshuva. What did he do for the world of tshuva? So I would point out three different kinds of things that he did and his sensitivity to the range of issues. The first, as far as tshuva as a whole, is that he made texts accessible to people who otherwise wouldn't have access to those texts, and many of those texts being about tshuva. So Gemara is like, as an example, the 8th parak of Yuma, suddenly the Gemara is later on in the parak about tshuva are now accessible. The Baal Tanya, Igeres HaTshuva, the Baal Tanya, his writings on tshuva are now going to be accessible as a result of Rav Steinzelt and what exactly he did. Now this gets him into trouble a little bit. The translation of the Gemara, many of us may know, there were Gedolei Yisrael, and not a few of them, that were not a little happy with the Steinzelt edition of the Gemara. Rav Shach, Rav Eliashiv, these are big names of people that were that were very, very anti his Gemara. Rav Aaron Feld and Rav Shiva of Ner Yisrael published a strong critique of Steinzelt's Gemaras. I'll give you a paragraph from it, but he wrote as follows. Granted that the Steinzelt phenomenon has opened up the Talmud to many thousands of people that can now learn Gemara. Granted also that, to those untutored in its complexities, it has offered a new appreciation for Talmud and its method. People that can't make their way through a Gemara now aren't used to the complexity of Shas, so now they're able to. But the serious question which arises from this analysis is whether Steinzelt has popularized the real Talmud or a grossly simplified version of it. In his attempt at translating Gemara, did he actually give you Gemara? Or do you simplify things? It's not really Gemara anymore. If, as is maintained here in his article, the Steinzelt Talmud is unreliable once it ventures into areas beyond simple pshat, does this imply that the entire Steinzelt au revoir, my wife is the French speaker, I'm sorry, has in fact achieved popularity at the cost of rigorously scholarly analysis and accurate treatment of classical sources? Rav Aaron Feldman points out, here's always the thing. Rav Steinzelt is an out-of-the-box, wildly creative thinker. When you're an out-of-the-box, wildly creative thinker, there will be pushback. Not because people are not creative. Ron Feldman's a creative thinker. Rav Shach, you can't learn Avi Ezri, not that he was a creative thinker. But they may disagree. Not all forms of creativity are necessarily palatable to all people. There was critique about the way he translated Gemara, critique about the way he changed the tour of the daf, critique about the accuracy of certain comments that he had. But undoubtedly, he did make things accessible to lots of people on a level of tshuva. What else did he do besides making certain texts accessible? So he put out a copy of Igeres HaTshuva of the Alter Rebbe, and here's important. Igeres HaTshuva, the Stein points out in source number, I guess the second source number two on the sheet, as he points out as follows. The tshuva can be looked at from different ways. When the Baal HaTanya spoke about tshuva, and here's an important sensitive, you have to pay attention to this point, says the Baal HaTanya, when the Baal HaTanya spoke about tshuva, what he did was, he didn't talk about should you do tshuva and why tshuva is good. He wasn't trying to sell you on the value of tshuva. He was talking about tshuva from the perspective world of pnimius, in a deeper sense, what is the essence of tshuva? Talking about upper worlds, getting into ideas that are on some level Kabbalistic, what is the essence of tshuva? So Steinzelt makes certain basic texts more accessible, certain texts that deal with things in more of a pnimius kind of a way. He also writes a sefer called Tshuva. Who is the sefer Tshuva geared to? This is an amazing, I think it's like 40 years, 50 years ago, the sefer. It's the wisdom of writing this as follows. The work Tshuva is not a work to convince people to do Tshuva. The work Tshuva is a guide for those who have already been inspired. For once you've now become, you're on your way towards being a Baal Tshuva. So let's relate to so many of the complex issues that you're going to have to deal with as a Baal Tshuva. So now you're going to have to deal with questions like how do you interact with your family now that you are a Baal Tshuva, a variety of other, a new community. What does that look like? And he wrote a work. So what's amazing is he's making Talmudic texts, Gemara is accessible. He's talking about Pnimius, the essence of Tshuva, from a deeper Hasidic perspective. And he translates, when he does work as far as the Baal Tanya. He also writes more of a practical guide for Baalei Tshuva, to be able to properly navigate things. Many of us are aware of this, that sometimes Baalei Tshuva have an exceptionally challenging time really adjusting and becoming full members of the community, and sometimes they end up sort of going back off as a result of some of those struggles in their journey, and Steinzelt's addressing that. He also wrote drushas. When drushas, he spoke about the way that he related to, the way that he understood Tshuva in a way which is not just translating text, not in the pnimius, in the deeper Kabbalistic sense, not a practical guide of raising issues, but the way many people speak about tshuva, in a way which is a little bit more inspiring, in a way which is about orienting ourselves, in a way which is giving us some insight. So all of this, in many ways, has been a hakdama. Hakdama to Rav Steinzelt. Rav Steinzelt is a very wildly popular figure, one that's a little bit controversial in certain seaboards, one that in this seaboard is, I think, immensely popular. And certainly Reb Steinsaltz, a figure that wrote about a wide range of issues because he understood the need for there to be a wide range of issues spoken about, and was able to do so in a powerful way. I want to develop, though, so what did he say about tshuva? Like a mahalach. What did he do about tshuva that was really important? And I think it's important we speak about it. I think it's an amazingly interesting and, I think, perspective that is relevant to the beginning of Elulzman. Certainly the beginning of Elulzman, in our year in yeshiva. Let's note the following. I'll put this out even as a... I was never super into his svarim. To be totally honest, I was never really... I never got into Steinel so much. Rabbi Benevitz, for those of you who didn't know, a bunch of years ago recommended in passing Steinel's svarim. So that recommendation was enough for me to buy a sefer, two of his, and to look through it, probably here or there, if we're being a little bit generous on the frequency in which I looked and opened up the svarim. It was more like, I don't know. One of the svarim looked at a little bit more is a sefer on Moedim. And it's important, and this actually I heard Benavid say after Rachel's passing, which is a very, I'll say it a little bit differently, but it's a very interesting insight. Sometimes you can be around a figure that's very, very creative, but he's using his creativity to highlight his creativity. And he's a creative figure, and he's interested in having Talmidim that are aware of his creativity, and that are aware and able to process the things that he did that were really very unique and very special, to be able to sort of hear and process and to witness his creativity. It's like the mashal would be, there's a model of shir giving where it's all about like, okay, the Rebbe's in the front, he gives his chidushim, and your job is just, is that. Professor Emanuel Etkes once wrote that about the Vilna Gaon. At the Gra, there are two kinds of talmidim. There are talmidim that follow, it's an amazing insight, and this is true, I think, for Soloveitchik and for others also. There are talmidim that are wonderful at knowing the chidushim of their Rebbe, and there are talmidim that continue the mesorah of being mechadesh like their Rebbe. And those are two different models of talmidim. And most of us, I think it's true about people you mentioned, but most of us probably have elements of both. But there are those two kinds of talmidim is really intriguing. Rav Steinsaltz was not interested in having talmidim only that were going to know his chidushim, but this is going to be a starting point. But he wanted to have talmidim who were going to be creative, and he was a believer in building people to be big, not just to build people to be followers of his. It's a particular kind of a perspective. There are a couple of Ma'amari Chazal, and there are a couple of insights he has that he very much sort of likes in forming this approach. For him, this is part of the goal of tshuva. Part of the goal of tshuva, and here's an interesting idea, many Bali Machshava talk about what is the difference between people and animals. What's the distinction between people and animals? So the Unkelist famously understood the difference between people and animals is koach hadibor, the ability to speak. But can't animals communicate also? So that's maybe not speech, something else. The Rambam thought, I think the primary difference was really, which is reflected in speech, is really man's capacity to think at a very complex level. One thing Steinsaltz says, and for him this is the essence of tshuva, tshuva is not about accumulating more mitzvos. Tshuva is not about keeping more halachos. It's also about that, and you do have to learn, and you do have to keep mitzvos, but it's not what tshuva is at its core. Tshuva at its core, lashuv, to return, we'll get into an additional harvest in a second, but it's a much broader idea, and part of what makes man unique is the capacity to have long-term, far-reaching goals. And part of tshuva is about having long-term, far-reaching goals. What are your real ambitions? What do you really want to do? And if all Elul is for you is a couple more minutes of learning and a little bit more kavanah in davening, and it doesn't have that sort of ultimate vision of what you're striving for, says Rav Steinsaltz, that's many things. It's holy. It's wonderful. Just don't call it tshuva. Don't call it tshuva. Tshuva, to return, to move somewhere, is more than that. And these big goals become very important. And what are the goals that are there? So let's develop things. The role of goals and the role that they play as part of the tshuva process. So he quotes Tana de Belio. It's a very famous comment to Tana de Belio The whole piece is super kedai to read. It's amazingly inspiring. There's a line here which often gets quoted, but we're only going to quote the line, but read the whole piece. It's really awesome. Which is lefichach yu omrim kol echad ve'echad, that every person has a requirement to say. Later on, they're going to quote from the Gemara in the Sanhedrin, b'shvili nivra ha'olam, that the world is created for me. You should feel like the world's created for you, like you really matter. Says Rav Stein, don't hear quote, sorry, says the Tanya Leo, what should a person say every day? Ma'aseh ma'asai ma'asai Avram Yitzchak ve'Yaakov. That when are my actions going to reach the level of Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov? When are my actions going to attain that level? Now, in a certain sense, that statement in Tanya Leo at its face is absolutely ridiculous. The answer is, when am I going to reach Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov? So if we have to wager money on what the answer is probably never. But it's not one of those kinds of questions. It's more of a rhetorical question, but probably it's more of an inspirational kind of a question. It's giving you where to search for, what to aspire for. You will not necessarily become Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov, although Derech Agav referenced sometimes the Biala Rebbe added two Ani Mamans to the 13. One of his Ani Mamans is Ani Mamen Ben Mishlema, Shadachol Dor Vardor Yei Tzadikim, on the level of Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. Okay, that's an interesting insight. But and this Medrash is actually part of it, and maybe we can in a certain sense reach that Madrega. But you have to aspire. You have to aspire. So step one for Steinzel, Tshuva is about goals. Step two, you know what the goal is in many ways? The goal is massive. The goal in the Medrash is reaching the Madrega of Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. But I don't know, am I ever really going to reach it? Am I ever really going to make it? And what's the point in having goals if I don't know if I'm ever really going to be able to attain it? So look at source number 5 on the second sheet. Rav Steinzeltz as follows. The Medrash custom, it says in the Medrash the following. Tefila osa mechza. Tefila does half. What does the Medrash mean that tefila does half? Hakavana hi she'etzem ha'tefila. Just davening for something. Haratzon v'habakasha. The desire, the thirst, the quest. Kvar mikadmim es ha'adam kidei machtis min haderech. That just the bakasha itself already gets you like half of the way there. You've already made progress when you have certain desires. Kol mishala tova v'kavana tova. Every desire that you have, every request that you make, na'asos chelek mehametziyah shel ha'adam v'hen kvar tfilas haderech. They become part of you already. He's channeling here, just to give the context, a line of the Baal Shem Tov. The line of the Baal Shem, which the Tiferes Yerucham understood, is built into the halachas of Shinoi Kona, which the of Shari Shinoi Makom. It's built into what the Shem Yishmur writes, Parsh Kisavo, is the din of Erev Tchumen, and that is that your machshava is koveya where you are. Your machshava is koveya where you are. You are where you want to be. That, again, the Shem Yishmur says is the pshat in the halacha of Erev Tchumen. What's Erev Tchumen? I can only walk 2,000 amos on Shabbos, but if I make an Erev, I can decide that my 2,000 amos, generally speaking, surrounds you when Shabbos starts, but you can be koveya that, no, the 2,000 amos really go from over there. Really, they go from over there, 2,000 amos around that point, because I have the ability to decide and to determine that's my place, that's my place. And for Steinzeltz, part of the goal of having aspirations and goals, because the aspirations and the goals themselves build you. They become part of you. They become elements of your essence. They become what you're striving for. They are going to determine where in many ways you're going to go. He quotes a pasuk. It's a pasuk by David HaMelech. Madua lo ba ben Yishai, the Darshanim. It's a beautiful vort. Drush homiletics. It's not the pshat in the pasuk, but it's an insight. Darshanim say pshat in the following, says Rav Steinzeltz. Madua lo ba ben Yishai gam tmol gam ayom. How come ben Yishai, the child of Yishai, didn't come? It's a simple pasuk, not that fundamental. Didn't come today, didn't come yesterday. What's going on? El halechem, you know, for bread. Like, what's happening? Darshanim see in this pasuk a hint, a reference to a profound error that Jews make. Madua lo ba ben Yishai. Why didn't Ben Yishai come? Ben Yishai isn't only David HaMelech, Ben Yishai is also Mashiach Ben David. Mashiach is the descendant of Yishai also. So Madua lo ba Ben Yishai. Why isn't Mashiach coming? What's going on? Because Gam Tmol Gam Hayom. Because the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, the 2 days Hayom, that's we're talking here Yom Ha'aretz. That those days, what happened? They were Ba El HaLechem. Gamayom el halechem. They came for bread. They came for bread. What does this mean to Darshanim? You know why Mashiach didn't come? Because Gam Tmul Gam Hayom, because today and yesterday, when it comes to Shana time and Jews are davening, you know what they daven for? El HaLechem. They daven for Parnasa. They daven to be able to have enough bread. And the Darshanim say, idiots, if all you're hoping for when you daven, if all you're some bread is to have some food and to have some Parnasa, what a major error you're making. What a serious mistake you're making. Dream big, and you'll become bigger. And Mashiach's not coming because we're not asking for Mashiach. We were so caught up in some of the small things in life. We're so caught up in being able to... So, you know, it's like, can I move 3 more feet outside of my area? Can I find a way I could get like a little bit... That stuff is all chashav. It's all chashav. And it's good to hope and to daven for those things. But you want more than that also. We want big, historical events. We want geula. Geula. And for Steinzel, the major mistake, tshuva requires goals, but if you make good goals, strong goals, real goals, that becomes part of you, becomes part of your essence. And if you don't, and you limit it, you'll always be small. You'll always be small. And in a certain sense, and here's an important insight, it's a much easier life with small goals. It's a simpler life if you are really not that ambitious. You'll be okay, whatever I get, it's okay, you know? It is what it is. And if you're not so ambitious, if you don't have real goals, you also won't get that frustrated, or you won't live with disappointment. Part of the challenging thing here, which Rashi is just pointing at, if you want to really become big, if you want to really become someone, so it's going to be a little bit challenging. And here's it, you will never really achieve all of your goals. Masa Yagia, Masa, Masa Avosai, Avram, Yitzhak, V'Yakov, yeah, you're never going to... We're never going to feel like, yeah, I think I did it. Today was my Yaakov day. I think I've done it. Or like Avram? I don't know. Feel like Avram. You know? I don't mean like cynically, when like, you know, like the parents like, I want to kill you for my kid. You know, like things like that. I'm thinking like, like, you're like Avram, you know, like, you hear a parent being frustrated sometimes. I remember hearing a parent once say, they're like, I'm going to kill him. I was thinking like, okay, you've now achieved Avram level. You know, like, let's hope there's a divine decree telling you stop. You know, like, let's get there. Obviously, it was in a joking way, and it wasn't serious, Baruch Hashem. But that's like, but yeah, you won't necessarily reach your level, but you'll become a very different kind of person. For Steinzel, tshuva has an additional component, which is very much connected. When you are establishing your dream, and you're establishing your ambition, when tefillah osa mechza, when the Medjer tells us that tefillah itself does have, madua loba, you know, ben yishai, that you want to know when Google's going to come, because you have greater ambitions. So part of the goal for the Alter Rebbe, and this is a yisod that the Baba Shrebi emphasized a lot, which titles his Rebbe, Baba Shrebi emphasized a lot, and that is that tshuva at its core is returning, and an element of returning is returning to who you are, returning to your true self. I'm going to give a little bit of a full disclosure, and I'll be a little bit open about the following. There are a few ideas that I can't handle hearing more than it's about finding the true you and who you really are. That idea, I think I'm actually allergic. I think I break out in hives when I hear that particular idea. I want to explain why, and I want to tell you what Steindl does in a way which I think is actually very, very beautiful and very insightful. The Torah of Cook, I think on some level, who introduced it, you can hear it a lot in certain tzibors, about a lot of the goal of learning, a lot of the goal is to find out like who is the real you. Who's the real you inside? Those of us that are less emotional and less abstract are like that. I don't know what that means. Who's the real me? Like, what does that even mean? I am me. I don't know what the real me, you know, really is. I think it's an idea in like certain 20th century philosophy, that kind of idea, like the real you. I don't know what that means. Part of the reason why I have a hard time with it, and this for years ago, was I often thought that when people say like, I remember once years ago, having a conversation with Rav Bachman. And Rav Bachman said something very intriguing. I was asked to write an article for something on Neo Chassidus about 6-7 years ago. He's a really interesting person. So I sat down with him, and I asked him a question or two. So one of the things he said, which I think is very wise, it's very wise and very real. He said, you know, there's two kinds of Chassiduses. And when guys learn Chassidus, he said that there's a major difference between them. One of them is a lima that you have, which is essentially toveya nothing from you. It demands you do nothing differently. It just is there to make you feel good. It's just there to make you feel good. The other kind of chassidus is a chassid which is toveya something from you. Like, now do something. Now, what are you going to do as a result? You now have to daven better. You now have to learn more. You now have to do more chesed. Eino doma a limud, which is there to make you feel good, and a limud, which is there to be toveya something. Often, when people speak about, this is my own read, when people speak about finding the real you as a talk, it's often not coupled with any sense of demand. Find the real you and be good with that, with whatever that happens to me. It's not, doesn't come with a certain, like, mechayiv. It's interesting, in the Dati Lumi world in Eretz Yisrael, if anyone follows the scene here, because Rav Kook, it's a big yisod, talking about, like, finding the real you. One of the Talmidim of Rav Lichtenstein, when he was masbid of Lichtenstein, I loved this line, said, Rav Lichtenstein never spoke about finding the real you, he spoke about godless, he spoke about becoming big. It was never about, like, because sometimes finding the real you is an excuse for justifying mediocrity. People speak about, oh, tshuva is finding the real you, so you're like, who's the real me? You're like, I think in my essence, I'm a guy that sits on my bed and shorts and t-shirt all day watching Netflix while having, like, you know, one hand in popcorn, one hand in chips, and one of those hats with, like, two cans on top. I think that's who I am. You know, like, that's my essence. So, what, and, you know, the guy with the mirror, like, what are you doing right now? You're like, chufa. You know, like, this is who I am. You know, like, and you're like, oh, okay. You know, like, to each his own as far as what you are. But sometimes, I always, like, that's my image of, like, that idea being ridiculous. Like, returning to who you are is like, I think that's it. Rabbi, it's who I am. You want me to be different than I am? Like, what's wrong with your brainwashing? You know, like, it's like, no, I just want you to get out of your bed and not watch Netflix all day. Like, that's not a, you know? So, Rav Steinzel is into this idea, but he does so in a really intriguing way. It's uniquely Chabad way. Rav Steinzel understands as follows. He says, let's define terms for a minute. What does it mean to return to who you really are, especially if what we've been speaking about up until this point and the other shmooze in the Rosh Steinfeld is that tshuva is about being big and tshuva is about major aspirations. So he says as follows, there are people that can mistakenly believe that what is the real me, so it's a question as to what feels natural. What feels natural? So for me, maybe it doesn't feel natural for me to put on tefillin, it's weird to wear boxes over my arm and over my head, and therefore, I'm not really good. It doesn't feel natural to do so. So if I'm in an airport, and it's like a little bit embarrassing, I say, there's no way the real me is to put on tefillin. I'm not going to do it. And he says, if your feeling of the real you and the natural you causes a hefsek, causes distinctions between you and Ribbono Shel Olam, so that's how you can know with certainty that's not the real you. What we mean when we say the real you is to go to the place that you are destined to go. To become the person that you are in this world to become. That we are endowed with a Tzelem Elokim. And part of what it means to be endowed with a Tzelem Elokim is to have pre-programmed within us a relationship to Ribbono Shel Olam. Like in Chabad Chassid, the Pintla Yid, that deep down inside, Jews are really very, very Kadosh. And that we're really meant to do things in this world. And that if you make the mistake a little bit of thinking that, for me, my natural state is lower. My natural state is a little bit less. My natural state, this is not the real me. Well, if it causes breaks between you and Ribbono Shel Olam, if it causes division, put mechitzas between you and Hashem, so understand that's not really what we mean when we say return to you. Return to you, we mean, is the best version of what you're really meant to be, what your destiny really is. No one is meant to be a guy who is sitting on that bed before we're describing. No one's meant to be that. Like, why are you in this world? And you're like, this moment. You know, like, that ain't true. We know that's not true. We're in this world to be something bigger, to be something greater. And that's what we mean when we say returning to who you are. In that sense, Steinzel, it's about establishing big, high-level, real ambition. But it's also about understanding that the way that ambition is going to take form, which is true only for you, you in your unique way, is to understand who you really are and what you are really destined to do. What is the big version of you? What is the holy version of you? What is the kadosh version of you? What are those accomplishments? And, as I spoke about before, not what are those accomplishments, but what are you in your essence? People can do big things, but who are you really? And is there a kedusha that animates and emanates throughout your life? What is it? What is it really? I want to chazer and end with one piece of Rav Steinsaltz's that I think is really, really fascinating. But let me just... we're speaking about a thinker that we can speak about when he writes about tshuva, you know, all the time. He was the person who modeled tshuva. I was reading last night an interview of his. And they said, it was a couple of years ago. It was already probably, I guess, 80, whatever it was. What do you regret? Like, if you had to do anything differently, we would do anything differently. And he had a line like, I would do everything differently. Like, part of life and part of learning is that I would make, you know, small changes there. Great people are open to that. He was a model of tshuva, of being able to fix up certain svarim and being able to change some ideas and explore new ideas. He was an amazingly, amazingly important thinker who's a household name. He's a household name for thousands and thousands of people. Steinsaltz. It's a household name for what he's done for so many, and how many people he's opened up a world of Jewish text for, and how many people he's made Torah as a whole significantly more accessible. But in regards to tshuva, so speaking about tshuva in many different ways in his different svarim, what we were talking about today was giving an orientation of striving for something big, that when you strive for something big, that becomes a chelek of what you are and who you are, that striving for something big is what we're charged to do, even if we won't achieve, those levels, and that striving for something big is also about going back to who you really meant to be. Not returning to yourself as a means of, if it move beyond your comfort zone, but go back to what you're really supposed to be in a very, very powerful way. I want to end with Rav Steinsaltz. This Rav Benovitz pointed out. It was Parshas Ekev when he passed away. So this is from a Sefer in Chumash, Chayei Olam, Parshas Ekev at the end. It's an amazingly intriguing insight that relates to Sefer Dvarim. It's something which is like, sometimes when you learn Chumash, there are great insights about what's in Chumash, and sometimes there are awesome insights about what's missing from Chumash. So one of the greatest speeches of all time, one of the greatest monologues of all time, is Moshe Rabbeinu in Sefer Torah. Moshe gets up and Moshe speaks. Some of us nowadays actually have more insight to this. Typically, when you watch, let's say, you watch a great speech, so when there's a great speech, what they'll often do, the camera at that speech, sort of at the end and throughout, will have pictures of the crowd. So you can see how people are reacting to that great speech. So a person makes a big push, it's a major moment, and they'll show pictures of how people react. Typically the live audience, but when there's no live audience, they'll still show pictures of how people are reacting from wherever they are. Moshe Rabbeinu gives this amazing talk in Sefer Devarim. Sefer Steinsaltz, we have no idea how Klai Yisrael responded to that. Like, what was their reaction? They were like, wow, that was awesome. That's like top five. Moshe, that was one of your best. You know, like, is that what it was? Were they moved? Were they inspired? And especially remember, this is the new generation. This is not the door that saw Moshe Rabbeinu perform the miracles. This is a younger generation, a generation which is anticipating going into Eretz Yisrael, that is saying goodbye to the manhig of Moshe Rabbeinu, who's 120 years old. You know, he's 119, whatever, at this particular point in time. So it's an older leader speaking. And Rav Steinsaltz wonders, you know, aim the Torah tier, ketad higibu b'nei Yisrael, the new Moharosh. Moshe Rabbeinu, how did they react? It's missing from Chumash. Like, what did they do? Did they, like, you know, like, get up afterwards, and, like, they were cheering? And they were like, we are now ready to go into Eretz Yisrael? Like, what was their reaction? Rav Steinsaltz says, you know, at the end of Sefer Dvarim, we do have a little bit of, we're still in this, you know, we have a little bit of Divrei Preda, but we don't know so much. Did they feel when Moshe Rabbeinu left and when he was done that they were now like Yisomim, they were now like orphans having lost their great Rebbe? He says, I suspect, is it possible the following happened? Says Rav Steinsaltz, it's very intriguing. Undoubtedly, Klal Yisrael was sad. They were saying goodbye to their manhig. They were saying goodbye to Moshe Rabbeinu. It's definitely possible. He says, but is it not possible that there were people in the crowd? Is this just think about ourselves for a moment. Is it not possible that there were people in the crowd? Olegamat chushasha shomim, kmo anashim tzeirim rabim bereishis darkam, shomim ve'enim shomim esadvarim. Is it possible that they were like there, but they weren't fully listening all the way? There's a new generation, and there's an old guy getting up to talk. Possibly the younger chaver was like tuning out just like a little bit. They were like listening. They were listening. But is it possible they felt like, Moshe, a lot of the things you're saying, they're relevant to the past. Hasharos ben amecholim. All things you're warning us about in the future. Who knows? Who knows? Who knows? And so the Scheinzels, I think what Moshe may have been saying to them was as follows. It's so powerful. Again, it's all conjecture, but as far as like just the experience missing from Chumash, I think it's a very powerful insight. And certainly we have these feelings sometimes. Kol shu rotu laso. Moshe was only trying to do the following. He's telling them, you know what, you're adults now. Chever, younger generation, it's on you, and I'm not going to be able to go with you all the way anymore. I can't go in with you to Eretz Yisrael. I've been the leader up until this point, but now in many ways, this is who you are. Uvesof hadvarev hu gam omer, and mistama he said also, kimosha horim rabim omrim lialdeim b'matzav kaze. Again, it's all drush. He said, maybe Moshe said the equivalent of what so many parents have told their children. Anu batuach shematem. I know that you heard what I've been teaching you, what I've been telling you. Aval safek imikshaftem. But I'm not sure you were really listening. You talk to a kid sometimes, and children, you're like, I know you heard what I said, but I'm not sure you really listened. I'm not sure you really listened. Vani yachol rak la'achel lachem. And all I can wish for you is shetavrus ha'mecholim b'chayim b'tzura ha'tov b'yoster. I hope, says Moshe Rabbeinu, that everything goes as well as possible. And even though I know from experience it won't always be good, zoi darka sa'olam, that's the way the world is. Dor chadash magia, new generation came. V'acharei kol hazichronos v'hasharos, after everything Moshe Rabbeinu warned them about in Sefer Devarim. Ha'horos v'hasharos, the warnings and all the instructions. B'sofol davar, shel davar, hu holich la'asos, as darko shelo. The new generation was going on their path and Moshe couldn't go with them. It was going to be their tovyos, their mistakes, and their tikkunim, and their solutions. In many ways, this is a yesod, Rav Steindl sort of reading into this scene, what he himself in many ways pushed, and what he himself tried to encourage, which is, you got to think big. You got to think big. But thinking big is about becoming, understanding who you're really supposed to be, and that's not the same thing as the guy next to you. Obviously, Shulchan Aruch, Torah, Mitzvahs, is the koveya, is the starting point. But the unique flavor is going to be your unique flavor, your unique flavor. And it's important to hear, it's important to listen, but it's important also to build people who are big enough and independent enough to stand on their own 2 feet. Like Rosenzweig always says, but the Mefarshim said before him also, he likes to point out, V'ha'amidu talmidim harbe, talmidim, to have a talmidim pergavos, V'ha'amidu, to have them stand up. And to have the kinds of talmidim that can stand up on their own 2 feet. And Rav Steinzel gives us a model for producing the kinds of people who can stand on their own 2 feet. It's part of what Shuv is about. That you can approach texts on your own, and he'll make it more accessible so that you can open up a Gemara anywhere in Shas and be able to tackle it. You can open up so many Sfarim, Chumash, you can open up Tani, whatever, so many Sfarim, Rambam, you can open up and now are going to be more accessible, and charging you to be big. Charging you to be big and to be big in your way. And obviously there are risks with that. When you encourage lots of creativity, it always comes with lots of critique, and it's understandable, and we have to be cautious about that. But the model, I think, is an incredibly important model for us to be aware of and for us to embrace and for us to be sensitive to a certain kind of environment and a certain kind of approach that Rav Steinzeltz in many ways, I think, represents and in many ways is what he's all about.